You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. As we heard yesterday, Governor Scott Walker is officially out of the presidential race.
Today, I believe that I'm being called to lead by helping to clear the field in this race so that a positive conservative message can rise to the top of the field. With this in mind, I will suspend my campaign immediately.
Coming up in a bit, we'll look at what this means for Wisconsin. First, a look at the presidential campaign itself. After a strong start at the top of the polls in Iowa, Governor Walker had been steadily dropping both in state and national surveys, bottoming out under 1% in the latest CNN national poll.
He also had a disappointing performance at the second presidential debate last week, speaking fewer minutes than any other candidate.
We're taking your calls. What did you think when you heard the news yesterday that Governor Walker was dropping out of the presidential race? How do you think this decision will affect other candidates? What do you think led to his decline in the Republican presidential field? And if you're a Republican voter yourself, who is your attention turning to now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Charlie Jacobs is with us now to talk about the news. He's an associate professor of political science at St. Norbert College. Charlie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
So what was your first reaction when you heard that Governor Walker was going to hold this press conference? Did you expect then that this was the big announcement for him?
I suspect everyone did, although I think there was probably a little suspicion in everyone's mind that it was maybe something else, only because I think it came as quite a shock and surprise to most people. I think when you saw his performance in the debate, when you heard him speak, while you understood he was slipping in the polls, you didn't think at this early date, after sort of laying the groundwork that he did, that he'd pull the plug before a single vote being cast in any primary. So I think everybody might have thought there was another announcement, but really probably in their gut felt this is going to be the end for his campaign.
Well, that is something people are scratching their heads about, that pulling out before there was a single vote cast. Now, it sounds like there's a large financial factor there, but does this make sense to you that the governor pulled out? You know, here's a three-time Republican winner in a blue state, one-time front runner. We all know that presidential politics are capricious. Did he get out of the race too soon? Could he have stayed alive somehow?
Well, he could have stayed alive somehow. I mean, you're watching some of the candidates that are still plying the waters here of the GOP primary process doing it on a shoestring, and I suppose he could have done that as well. But I think when you come out of the gate sort of full of vim and vigor and going like gangbusters and creating a large infrastructure for your campaign, dialing it back to a shoestring budget is rather difficult, and I think you might be doing a disservice to yourself and really having creating difficulties for yourself to raise money if you get stuck in that kind of cycle. So it may have been sort of an imprudent kind of approach to his campaign if he had been a little bit more cautious coming out of the gate, that he might have been able to sort of limp through till Iowa, maybe win enough caucus votes to guarantee a shot at New Hampshire and then move on. But I think the way it was structured, his campaign was structured, he didn't really have many options once the well of donations kind of dry up on him.
He had, as I hear, 90 staffers. He came out of the gate really big, really large with that operation. In retrospect, a mistake?
Probably. And I think this is one of the new dynamics of modern presidential politics. It used to be that you could kind of have a quiet campaign and build support among all of the political players and elites in a particular state, raise some money, have a campaign organization, but one that's kind of slim and can do the job for you. And unfortunately today, it seems like everybody has to run a national campaign from the moment they come out. And it's impossible to have that kind of money and sustain it over time unless you have a really deep well of resources. So somebody like Trump, somebody like Bush, they either have connections or personal wealth. And while Governor Walker has some connections, you know, you have to raise money on two fronts now, the super PACs and your traditional campaign. And if you service one rather than the other, you can put yourself in real trouble.
Now, speaking of a deep well, it did seem that Walker was well-funded, maybe not to Trumpian proportions, but he had a very well-funded super PAC. So what does that say about super PACs in politics?
Well, super PACs can be really beneficial, but they can also, I think, be really harmful. And, you know, these are relatively new vehicles. I mean, they kind of were born out of a couple of Supreme Court decisions that we had, 2009, 2010. People are probably familiar with Citizens United. And so, you know, these were born of those decisions. And super PACs allow individuals to raise money, but it has to be independent of their campaign. And that's one of the things about super PACs that's a little bit squirrely. So they're actually called, sort of by law, independent expenditure-only committees, and that's their formal name. We call them super PACs. They can raise unlimited money. They can spend unlimited money. But the problem is they have to spend it independent of the campaign. It's not buying plane tickets. It's not buying staffers. It's only advocating for the election of a particular candidate. So you have to raise money independently for a campaign to do all of those day-to-day functions. And so even though he has this big pool of money, this $20 million in the bank, it can only be used for limited purposes, and again, independent from the campaign. So he'd have to go out and raise money to keep those staffers, you know, paid, and he'd have to raise independent money in order to keep his campaign going in Iowa, New Hampshire, and other states as well. So it looks like he had a lot of money, but it's money you can't touch. It's kind of like a weird trust fund that kids can't get to until they hit a certain age.
Well, so for critics of super PACs, people who wring their hands over it and say that this is tilting the political landscape into a position which is not fair to all candidates, does this undercut that argument that maybe it's not as compelling an argument in favor of a candidate as maybe just a well-grounded general campaign?
I think that, again, the jury's out still a little bit on the way these can be used, are used, how they're beneficial. I think what this one case is illustrating is that super PACs alone aren't going to win you a primary and probably aren't going to win you an election. You need a broad base of donors who are going to support your overall campaign. So if you have a sugar daddy or a sugar mama who's pumping money into your super PAC, well, they can only give a limited amount of money to your general election fund. And so you've got to make sure that you have a broad base of supporters who are going to throw some dollars your way. So somebody like Bernie Sanders, if you look at the money he has been collecting, it's been those small donors. No Koch brothers involved, just all those small donors. And those can be really effective on the ground when you have to campaign. And certainly $20 million in the bank so you can run a bunch of ads, or at least your super PAC can run ads in support of you, help to pull money away from what you need to spend in your own campaign fund. But, you know, I don't know if somebody like Bush is going to be able to spend the $100 million that his campaign has accrued in its super PAC. That's a lot of money, and I'm not sure how well that's going to go towards helping him get elected in the GOP primary.
We're talking with Charlie Jacobs, Associate Professor of Political Science, St. Norbert College, talking about Governor Walker's early exit from the race and what it means for the rest of the Republican field going forward. Here's a little bit about what the governor said yesterday.
I encourage other Republican presidential candidates to consider doing the same so that the voters can focus on a limited number of candidates who can offer a positive conservative alternative to the current front runner.
Okay, so now that Walker's out, we're at, what, 15? This is not exactly a tiny field, but will that statement, that sentiment of maybe starting to winnow this field down so that a front runner, maybe an alternative to Trump, if you're Scott Walker, that's what you want, maybe that person can emerge. Is that going to be an argument people listen to?
I don't think it's going to be an argument that candidates listen to. I mean, the public might be more focused in exactly what they're paying attention to in the debates and trying to choose among the various candidates. But, you know, there still are a number of candidates with relatively large storehouses of cash that they can spend on their campaigns. So I think most of them are going to stick it out. At least we'll have to see with the October filings with the Federal Elections Commission how much money these people have on hand. But, you know, Jeb Bush in his last filing had over $10 million to spend. Ted Cruz had about $8.5 million. Marco Rubio had $10 million. So I don't see any of those individuals dropping out anytime soon. I mean, Rick Perry dropped out. He had less than $1 million on hand on his last filing. And, that's problematic. And I think that's what Governor Walker was facing. We'll see when the FEC reports come out. But unless somebody is in dire straits like apparently Walker was, I don't see them hanging it up, especially if they've been able to get by on limited amount of funding in the campaign they've run already.
And it is super early in the season. It's worth pointing that out. But with so many candidates in field, with so many of them having those deep pockets, as you say, I know it's early to speculate, but how do you see this thing ending? How does it get winnowed down?
I don't think deep pockets is enough, and you've already started to see the way in which these candidates are bouncing around. If they wind up being the flavor of the day because they performed particularly well at a debate or they had a nice performance at a particular event, say the one in Michigan last weekend or something on a national television program, I mean, these tend to raise and lower the expectations of the public and the way in which they view the candidates. So I don't see deep pockets necessarily being the only factor. It just means that some marginal candidates might stay in a bit longer because they have money to spend and money to blow on the campaign. But when you start to drop in the polls, as happened to Governor Walker, it's really hard to get people to come to your campaign events and sustain the donations that will keep you moving through the process. I mean, Governor Walker indicated, or at least some of his aides indicated, he was having trouble filling the rooms for his fundraising events. And that really starts to ring the bell on the end of your campaign.
We're talking to political scientist Charlie Jacobs about the news that Governor Walker is dropping out, has dropped out, in fact, of the presidential race.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your reaction to that news yesterday. Were you surprised by Governor Walker dropping out? What candidate do you think will get Walker's supporters? And if you are a Republican voter yourself, were you disappointed, or do you think there's a stronger candidate in the field? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're picking up our discussion now with political scientist Charlie Jacobs, talking about Governor Walker's decision to drop out of the presidential race. That happened yesterday.
We're taking your calls now. How do you think Governor Walker's exit will affect the other candidates? Who gets Governor Walker's supporters and maybe his support down the road? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we go to our callers now. We've got Jenny with us in Williams Bay. Jenny, hi.
Hi.
What do you think?
I was pretty happy when he dropped out of the race. I live in Wisconsin, obviously. I didn't vote for him, but I did vote for getting him out of the office, which didn't work, to recall him. He put a bunch of families against each other here because of the union bash. And if he were elected president, I'm pretty sure he'd do it at the federal level, too.
And Jenny, how would you identify yourself? How do you usually vote?
I have voted for Republican or Democrat, mostly Republican. I'll be voting for Ben Carson. So I hope everybody else who was going to vote for Walker will go for Carson, too.
All right. Why do you suggest that move, throwing support behind Carson?
He's definitely a Republican, same lines as Scott Walker, but Ben Carson doesn't adhere to the party as much as it seemed like Scott Walker was doing. He's going to listen to the people more than Scott Walker would have.
Okay, so you see him as a little bit more of an independent thinker then. Is that what I'm hearing?
Totally, yes.
All right, Jenny, thank you so much for that. Appreciate your thoughts on that. And Charlie, Jenny usually votes Republican. She's going to be voting and putting her support at least behind Ben Carson. Do you think that's something that others will do too?
Well, I'm not sure about that. I think that much of Governor Walker's support that has left him already was probably looking for something they couldn't find in Walker himself. And so those who have sustained support for him probably liked his relatively moderate Republicanism. I know that he does sort of tilt right on a number of issues, but he's kind of a standard Republican, and his ideology is one that, I mean, he promotes himself as a Reaganite, and that's sort of very central, middle-of-the-road kind of Republicanism. So I think the people who have stuck with him will probably look for someone like him, and I'm thinking maybe a Kasich or Rubio, someone like that, and maybe even somebody with sort of Midwestern sensibilities, and that's why Kasich kind of popped to mind. I mean, Carson, I think, is someone who's viewed more of an outsider, more of a maverick and independent, kind of like Jenny was articulating. And so I'm not sure whether or not they're going to dump with somebody like Walker, or, you know, leave his campaign now that he's left it, and latch on to somebody like Ben Carson, who seems a little bit different from what Walker was presenting.
Well, thank you for your call, Jenny. And we're going to go next to Tom in Madison. Tom, hi.
Good afternoon. The operative word in Jenny's call was thinking. And I believe that Walker is simply inane and vapid. This guy should not even be in the governor's office, let alone even consider considering a presidential run.
Tom, thank you for the call. And Charlie, I want to ask you about Walker's call to, it sounded like, get people to mount an offensive against Donald Trump, the front runner. He referenced the front runner, nobody by name. And there was some polling to suggest that maybe Walker would actually have been a pretty decent choice for someone to take on Trump. What have you heard about that?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, we will never know. I think, as you mentioned at the start, he hardly spoke at all in the second debate. It wasn't much better in the first debate. And unfortunately, the arguments that the candidates themselves would have, they never really engaged in substantive issues. I mean, they would sort of skirt them. They'd throw out a couple of talking points. But sort of taking them on in a real in-depth, substantive way never really happened. And unfortunately for Walker, I think, is that he kind of got stuck in an endless loop of talking about some issues that were of concern of his and of Wisconsinites, but may not have really reflected what the public wanted to hear nationwide. And so we got the union issues, we got some regurgitation of Obamacare issues, and so I think that was a problem. And so when Trump would sort of wander off on one of his tirades on sort of a tangential issue, Walker would kind of come back and loop back to standard issues that he was accustomed and comfortable to talking about. So I'm not sure whether or not he would have really engaged someone like Trump, because Trump was kind of a loose cannon.
Talking to Charlie Jacobs right now, associate professor of political science at St. Norbert College, we're talking about what Walker's dropping out of the race means for the rest of the Republican field. And we'll go next to Barbara joining us in Iron River, Michigan. Barbara, hi.
Hi. So you want to know what I think. I think that Governor Walker, he joined the race late because he was not wanting to record who was donating to him. And people may forget that you don't have to tell who's giving you money until you actually finally run for something. So finally he did, and he had huge donors and super PAC, and then the numbers didn't roll in the polls. And so as soon as they figured out that he wasn't going to be the candidate, they probably pulled out, which is smart. And I wouldn't be surprised if they are supporting Fiorina now.
Okay, interesting. Barbara, thank you for your call. Appreciate your thoughts there. And what do you think about that, Charlie? People moving toward Fiorina and those donors leaving the flock early, do you think?
I mean, I think Barbara makes a really, really good point, because of course, you can raise money for an associated super PAC even if you haven't announced your run for presidency. But under federal law, you can only start really collecting significant amounts of money for your election campaign until you declare. Federal law allows you to raise some money to sort of do an exploratory, but until you announce, you can't really pick up those funds. And the longer he waited, the harder it was going to be for him to have money in the bank to actually run the campaign. I mean, it's only been about 70 days or so since he's announced, so it makes it really difficult. As to the Fiorina issue, I mean, I think she's an outsider, too. I think she's got the same kind of reputation as Ben Carson. I will say in the second debate, she was among the few who was really clear in articulating what her policy positions were. Again, in the short amount of time she had, but she was very focused. She had clear, comprehensible answers. I think I've mentioned before that I felt like she was almost reading off a teleprompter, that she was so well rehearsed, but at the same time it didn't sound rehearsed. So maybe individuals like that forcefulness. I mean, Walker got kudos when he went to Iowa in January, and he sounded charismatic and forceful and as though he had an agenda that he could promote. And maybe that does attract people to Fiorina, because that's how she came off in the last debate.
Well, Barbara, thanks for that. We're going to go next to Rose in Milwaukee. Hi, Rose.
Hello.
Hi, what do you think?
I am thrilled that Walker dropped out of the race, and as much as I don't agree with him on many issues, I am a moderate Republican, have always voted Republican, and actually, just due to the candidates in the last gubernatorial race, voted for Walker because he was the lesser of the two evils. I'm excited that he dropped out to make way for stronger candidates, because I think when it comes down to it is we have to look to the future and see who the Republicans are going to be up against. Is it going to be Hillary, Bernie, or will it be Joe Biden? And quite frankly, I just don't think Walker had it at all.
Now, Rose, right now the field has been tilting toward anti-establishment Republican candidates. Is that also how you're thinking right now?
You know, currently, I have Carly Fiorina as number one on my list, with Ben Carson following closely behind. And both of them are, you know, definitely not in the political sphere, never have been. But Carly Fiorina said something really, really telling in a recent interview. I believe it was on Sunday. And she addressed that head on, as she always has. She's so articulate. And as your guest has said, it's almost like she's reading off a teleprompter, because her answers are so clear, concise, well-researched, and she answers right away. But she addressed that by saying that, you know, politicians, not all politicians are evil or have malicious, you know, intent. But they've been in that pool for such a long time that in some way they just can't see anything else. It's like being a fish in a school of fish in the same water all the time. You just don't know anything else. But her bringing an outside view of not being in that water, in the Disneyland that is Washington, she can bring a fresh view and something that's realistic. And when she talked about how she's a breast cancer survivor, she lost a child to drug abuse. I mean, she's bringing real world experience, not only from her experience as the head of HP, but just her experience as being a human, as being a mother, as being a wife who's gone through some very challenging and tragic events in her own life. And I connect with her. She's a real person.
Rose, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us. A couple things there. She's also talking about the poise of Fiorina, her real-world experience, and Scott Walker making way for candidates like Fiorina. Is that the case? Does one candidate dropping out of such a big field really make space for anyone else?
I'm not sure it does. I don't think that Scott Walker had sort of a corner on the market of any element of the debate that's going on among the GOP candidates right now. So I don't think somebody's going to swoop in and try to take control of that field. But I think it does sort of start to loosen up some of the discussion that the candidates are going to have, the fewer and fewer there are at the table. The other thing is that as we get fewer and fewer people because the field winnows a bit, we're going to see those who are asking the questions at debates and pressing these candidates on issues focus more narrowly. So I think Carly Fiorina, although she did a wonderful job at the last debate, she is probably going to be the red meat that people go after in the next one. So if she got by on sort of luck and charisma in the last one, she better be prepared, because I think they're going to go after her like they went after Trump at the last one. So we'll have to see how well these candidates do on their feet. And maybe she'll do wonderfully and replicate her second debate performance. But we'll have to see how this goes. And
Charlie, we got to leave it there, but thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Charlie Jacobs, Associate Professor of Political Science at St. Norbert College. He joined us to talk about Governor Walker's press conference yesterday, where he announced he was suspending his campaign for president.